time for Sounding Off with Phil Goth.
Good morning.
Good morning, Pierce. How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
Yeah, good, good. The sun is shining at the moment, but it was pouring down overnight. So, hey, it's Auckland and it's spring. Anything could happen.
It is. Exactly right. Exactly right. So, a few days ago, the 1080 drop happened.
Yeah. I think they're partway through the drop, and I know it's controversial, but the court was pretty clear-cut in what it ruled. When the anti-1080 group sought an injunction, they said that the judge said he was happy with the science, that there were safeguards in place, and that the council had followed the proper consultative purpose. And look, nobody likes the idea, I guess, of dropping poison in the environment, but even less do we like the idea that our native bush around Auckland is being decimated by pests like opossums, and that our bird life is being destroyed by rats and stoats and opossums. And, you know, you don't have to go further than the Parliamentary Commissioner for the Environment, who said not only have we faced 53 bird species becoming, native bird species becoming extinct in Auckland, but actually 80% of the surviving species are also now endangered. So it is critically important that we deal with the predator problem. And I feel that very, very personally, because about a year ago, with the Kiwis for Kiwis group, we released kiwis for the first time back into the Hoonuas after about 80 years. And that was after we'd done a hell of a lot of work to try to wipe out the predators. You know, there were traps set. There'd been an earlier 1080 drop a couple of years earlier. But it only took one ferret that survived that to wipe out a couple of the kiwis that we released. And that was a real heartbreak. You know, I would love to see our native bird population thriving back on the mainland, as well as the areas that we've made predator-free out in the Gulf. And 1080 is the only effective way that we can achieve that. And, you know, the Department of Conservation says that, Royal Forest and Bird says that, the Parliamentary Commissioner for the Environment says that, the scientists say that, and I think it's the way that we have to go.
In terms of mitigating risk now that the 1080 has been dropped, because I've seen that yesterday two of the reservoirs that are supplying water to Aucklanders were still shut off. What happens now?
That's precautionary. The 1080 has a very short life of being active, and I think they're closing the lakes that might potentially be affected by it for about four or five days, and they're testing the water. They do not believe that there will be any effect on the water, but they're taking a precautionary approach, which I think is appropriate at this time. So two of the four lakes they're not drawing water from during the period of the drop and some days afterwards, and they have a testing regime in place to detect any contamination, any potential contamination that might take place, though they're confident that there will be none.
Okay, cool. And during the actual drop, were there any issues that took place? I saw that some of the Auckland Council staff members were trapped in.
I haven't seen that. I was due to go up to a tree planting actually in the Hoonuas this Friday, but because of the drop, we're postponing that. So they've got pretty rigid rules. I'm not familiar with the incident that you talked about, so you know that's something that council staff might comment on. But generally, these things it's been done right across the country, and the reason that it is done, you know, I've got a property out by the Hoonuas, and I can shoot opossums, I can use Tim's traps for opossums. But they just keep on coming back. And, you know, I on a small block of land one night, there were eight opossums that we shot on the property. And that's, you know it from the native trees that you're planting and trying to grow, that the opossums, they breed prolifically and they are devastating in their impact, particularly on trees like pahutukawas.
Yeah, absolutely. So speaking of property, Auckland Council has received a government loan, which will allow them to build, is it 7,000 new houses in the northwest?
Yeah, I was up in Whenuapai in Red Hills on Friday where we launched it. The former government actually started off the scheme. It's called the Housing Infrastructure Fund, and it's $1 billion to spend on interest-free, 10-year interest-free loans across the country to help high-growth cities like Auckland provide the infrastructure necessary to build the houses that our growing population demands. And we got $339 million of that, $339.2 million to be absolutely precise. Yep. And that is enabling us to build about 7,000 houses out Red Hills and Whenuapai in the northwest. And we went out there, Universal Housing, we're on a Universal Housing site. They're just laying the foundations of the first houses, so they'll be built in within about 12 months, the first of the houses, and families will be occupying it. And we've also done a special, because Universal Housing is a well-known housing firm, they're what's called a qualified partner, we're allowing them to get building consents for at the same time as they get the consents to do the underground services and the roading. And that's enabled them to bring the housing forward by 10 months. Now, we know we're about 45,000 houses short in Auckland at the moment, and that shortage of supply when there's huge demand means that that puts more pressure on buying homes, it puts more pressure on rents, it creates more homelessness. We're trying to get these houses and Kiwi Build houses and state houses built across the city as quickly as possible, and we're starting to make some progress in that area.
So is there plans for some sort of public transport or better public transport infrastructure for these families and people who will be living far sort of out?
Yeah, well, Red Hills is quite close to Westgate, so it's got a lot of the amenities out there, and it's quite close to the motorway where, you know, if you go up the Northwestern Motorway, you'll see the massive amount of work that's been done on that over the last couple of years. And, of course, the government has plans to put light rail through to Westgate so that, you know, by the time we get all of the houses built in there, we hope that, I'm not ruling out that there might not be a rapid transit bus service in the interim, but that's something that we're still working with government on. But there are certainly transport plans. When you build houses, you've got to have wastewater, stormwater, fresh water, roading into the housing estate, public transport. Otherwise, you know, you create houses in isolation without the amenities. It just doesn't work.
Yeah. And talking about the Auckland City Mission rebuild, does the Auckland Council have much involvement in that?
Yeah. I was along on Saturday morning, actually. We went along to 23 Union Street where the City Mission has moved into temporarily. They'll be there for a few years while they rebuild on the site of Hobson Street, where people will know the City Mission has been for about 38 years. And Auckland City Mission, I've got huge respect for. They've served Auckland for 98 years, and they have just done incredible things helping the most deprived people in the city. So I have quite a lot to do with the Auckland City Mission. Yep. We're giving them some support with payments that will cover the cost of, you know, the consenting work they're doing. They want to build a 9-story building in Hobson Street that will include 80 apartments that will be permanent apartments for chronically homeless people. They'll have an expanded medical facility there, a detox centre. They'll have a training centre, a dining centre. And, you know, that will be really important in enabling us in Auckland to deal with the most vulnerable and the most disadvantaged people. And it's not only dealing with their homelessness problem, but also the problems that lead to that, mental illness, drug and alcohol addiction, breakdown in family relationships, all of those things. And, of course, we worked closely with the Auckland City Mission when we did the homeless count last week.
Okay, cool. And lastly, I just wanted to touch on some of the submissions from the Council's Youth Advisory Panel about whether this fuel tax that we've seen an increase in will affect public transport, because they're obviously paying, they should be paying more for fuel as well. So is the price for public transport going to go up as well?
Well, Auckland Transport have told me they're holding their prices. They haven't passed on the price of petrol.
Yeah.
And, of course, much of the money that comes from the regional fuel tax will be invested in new busways, bus lanes, new electric trains, third track on the main trunk railway, walkways, cycleways. So, you know, the reason that you have something like the regional fuel tax is so that you can address 10 years of underinvestment in our transport infrastructure. And one stop congestion that's just really creating gridlock in the city. And also the other important thing I think we've discussed on air before is when your death toll in Auckland goes up at three times the rest of the population's road toll and rises by 78% in 4 years, you know you've got a serious problem. Over 1,700 people seriously injured, 64 killed last year. We're putting a lot of money, and I know from the rural roads that I drive in, one of the places they've started is new intersections, better road safety on rural roads to try to bring that human and social and economic cost of the road toll down. And again, it's regional fuel tax money that we're doing. And I'll be announcing pretty soon, now not everybody will like this, but I love it, some more red light safety cameras.
Yes,
because I ride a motorbike, and when I go through an intersection, I want to know somebody's not running a red in the opposite direction and is going to clean me out, like happened to me once upon a time many years ago. So it is about safety, and we're advertising where they are. And if you drive through a red light, you're a bloody fool, and you deserve what you get.
Well, speaking of safety, another concern that was raised by the panel was the perceived lack of attention given to commuter safety on public transport in the plan.
Yeah, well, one of the we've got the annual report for council coming out, and we've tried to keep a cap on our staff numbers. But one area where staff numbers have risen fast is the new management officers that we'll be putting on trains. And their role is around safety.
Yep.
Because what you want to know, you know, I travel from time to time by train, and I, you know, I don't do it probably late at night, you know, when you might have antisocial elements liable to use the train. But one thing that you do want to rely on is that when you're on the train, when you're on the bus, you're relatively safe.
Yes.
And by and large we are, but it's not a, you know, it's not 100%. And, you know, every transit system I've ever travelled on in the world, they have safety officers on there, and they are to deal with people who are drunk and offensive or, you know, young hoons that, you know, you see from time to time that there's a story, somebody's, you know, they have their cell phone snatched or robbed off them. We don't want to tolerate that sort of stuff. So I applaud the fact we've got more safety people now on our trains. I think that's a great
idea. So that is definitely something we can see some of this money invested in?
Yep. No, that's certainly happening. Awesome. And that's a deliberate policy that, you know, Auckland Transport is promoting to make sure there are more safety officers employed.
Cool. Well, thank you very much for talking to us this morning, Phil.
Yeah, thanks, Des. Good to talk to you again.
And
you
I'll
take care
talk
and have
to you
a
next
great week.
All right,
okay,
you too.
See you later. Bye.
That was Sounding Off with Phil Goff.